Something's going on in the woods. Something's going on.
They're not dogs. They're not coyotes. What could it be, right?
I had an encounter with a skunk ape, and it completely altered the course of my life.
I found a skull. Are you guys going to want to come build this?
Put him out.
Sightings of a UFO hovering over a barn.
Millie woke up from a dream, and when I went into the bedroom, she said there's a monster on the wall.
They saw that the creature had run through a barbed wire fence. They were able to obtain hairs. They sent the hairs to their lab, and it came back as an unknown creature.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to the most bizarre show on the internet. I am the one that they call Shane, or aka Shane Squatch. And alongside me, I have...
Oren.
Just plain old Oren.
Yep.
I was trying to be theatric, man. You left me hanging.
life full of disappointments.
Yeah, that about sums it up. But hey, at least one thing that the listeners won't be disappointed about is the fact that we have a great show for them today. So, hey, I got to play it off, man. But before we get into the show,
of course. That remains to be seen, I guess. It could be a shit show. We don't know yet.
Hey, man, I always hope for the best. And they turn out pretty good. I mean, people enjoy them, so it is what it is, man. I think they like when we just banter regardless. So, it is what it is. But before we get into that, of course, we have to do news and updates, run through the front of house stuff real quick. But the first piece of news and updates is that Oren has something to talk about with something that he did this past weekend.
Yeah, so this past weekend, probably be about a week and a half, 2 weeks by the time this episode airs. But me and Jenny went to Encounter Quest. You know, we've been talking about it on the show a little bit. It was a cryptid UFO, you know, kind of high strangeness event going on in Rockingham, North Carolina, so a couple hours from where me and Jenny live. You know, we went to this show last year. It was our favorite show we went to. This year was awesome as well. So just want to give a big shout out and a thank you to Jess and Kim for putting on the event. Jess, her company is Broken Branch Designs. They have a lot of cool, like, Bigfoot and cryptid type stuff, so definitely check that out. But just quick little rundown. So Friday night we had like a speaker meet and greet dinner type thing, and Jay from Cryptids of the Corn did like a Bigfoot casting class seminar type thing, so that was pretty cool. Another shout out, we met this super cool guy. His name is Nelson, and he is with a company called Flavors of the Forest. They're based out of Oregon, and he makes like all sorts of like spices and seasonings, and he's got this raw garlic dust. It's not like garlic salt, it's not garlic powder, it's like finer than that, but he calls it Bigfoot breath. And so he hooked us up with a couple jars of that. There's an original and a spicy. You know, we've been using it on everything this week. I've got some pork chops marinating with it right now, so we're super excited to check that out. Let's see what else. Oh, Jeff with Star Cruiser Studios, I know you've had him on inquiries before.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff's awesome.
Yeah, he's a super cool guy. He was there, and so me and him chatted a little bit, and we might be working on something here in the future. So big shout out to him, and then, you know,
for the show itself, or for something between you guys? Just curious.
Well, kind of something, you know, he makes the maps and the artwork, and
yeah.
He wants to do a North Carolina one for North Carolina shows, and, you know, he's kind of from, I think, like the Maryland area. So he didn't know a whole lot about the cryptids and folklore. So I'm going to help him out with that, and we'll see how that turns out and where that goes. But
that's awesome, man. News to me.
On the docket. Yeah, so.
And he's supposed to be at Small Town Monster Fest, which we'll talk about more about that soon enough here. So it'll be fun because all three of us get to hang out this time, because I got to meet him at where was it? I was talking to him downstairs at West Virginia, and I guess you were there, but we didn't all talk all together, I don't think. But
yeah.
Wait, but, did we talk all together?
Super cool guy. So I don't know if we talked all together, but we definitely talked to him separately.
So. I think we may have talked to him together because I think we both went downstairs and did a little quick cruise and stuff. And I think I started talking to him for a minute. We may have all talked together. I thought for some reason it was going to be the first time we actually all get to meet together. But yeah, we were at West Virginia all together. So.
We were at least in the same room at the same time. So, but
that counts for something. Anyway,
yeah. So a bunch of friends of the show were there. Like I said, Jay with Cryptids of the Corn was there. Kevin, Where the Weird Ones Are, he was there. Michael Thompson, our author friend, he was there. We met this super cool guy. His name was Joe Stauffer, I believe, and he's a cinematographer / producer. So, you know, a lot of old friends, made some new friends. Lyle Blackburn and Jeff Meldrum were the speakers. Ron Moorhead was there. So a lot of heavy hitters. Super fun event. And again, big thank you to Jess and Kim for putting it on for us.
We got
to
get those three heavy hitters on the show. I got Ron Moorhead's personal email a couple years ago, and I tried emailing him, and I don't know if it went to spam or not, but I was never able to get him on the show. But I've been wanting to have him on the show forever. So maybe we'll luck out. And since they know you, and maybe they'll be at Small Town Monster Fest, I think Lyle Blackburn is at least. Maybe we can luck out and actually get him on the show once they see our face a few times.
Enough times, maybe he'll agree to come on the show. But anyway, so that's kind of my news and updates.
So I guess kind of leading off of that, of course, for anybody that wants to come and hang out with us, have a fun time like Oren did with all of the other people in the community, and possibly even some of you listeners at the next event. If you guys want that to come and happen, you guys got to come out to Small Town Monster Fest 2. That'll be on June 29th, and it's going to be in downtown Canton, Ohio, at the Doubletree by Hilton Hotel. Kids 12 and under are free. Everybody else above that, of course, you have to buy some tickets. So make sure that you guys get your tickets. Let us know that you guys are coming. In because we would love to hang out with you guys there. Super looking forward to that one. We're going to be vending, of course. Going to have the full team with Oren, Jenny, Gabby, me, the kids, all that stuff. We won't be speaking at this event, but if you guys are interested in hearing us speaking, coming up at towards a little more towards the end of summer, of course, we got Squonkapalooza, which hopefully Oren will be able to make it out to that, but I'll at least be there, and we'll be speaking at that one. And then, of course, Cryptid Halloween, which is going to be in West Virginia, which we'll also talk about as it gets a little bit closer, but Oren and I will both be at that one. We'll be doing a presentation, and we'll be emceeing, so that one will be a lot of fun. So make sure you guys mark your calendar and come out to all the awesome events you're going to be hanging out at this year.
Yeah, a lot of big things coming up. But anyway, you guys know the drill. Don't forget to follow Bizarre Encounters and Open Minds Media on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and TikTok and Discord and all that good
stuff. Everywhere you can find on the internet, just follow it. Just make it simple.
All the social medias.
Every one of them.
And also, don't forget to submit questions for Bizarre Inquiries, which is our Patreon exclusive mini show. Submit your questions about, you know, paranormal, serious stuff. It can be jokey stuff. It can not even be paranormal. Whatever you guys want us to talk about, we will inquire about.
Philosophical stuff's always fun, of course. So don't forget to drop those kind of questions.
Get deep and hard.
Damn it.
That's what she said.
There it goes. I got to stop muting the soundboard because every single time I go to use it at that perfect moment, it's always muted. And the first time I got to turn it up real quick.
It's gone.
Yeah, seeing the moment's late. So now I got it turned up. We're good. Just in case I get to do another that's what she said.
I'll try to find one at some point.
And if anybody wants to report any encounters, you guys can report those to OMMEncounterReports@outlook.com. Or you guys know the link tree. You guys can submit them through there. There is a submission form for that. We recently picked up a story. It's one that I'll probably be reading on next week's show just because we were talking about the recap and everything in the front of this one's show. But the person said that it was okay if I use it on the podcast, but I haven't gotten an email back yet. So actually, I kind of wanted to verify with them before I talked about it on the podcast. So hopefully looking forward to that one, and we'll be able to talk about that next week. And if I get enough of you guys reporting some stuff, whether it's through text or you guys want to record a thing of you talking and send it to us, if you guys record yourself talking, then of course we can do something on the show where we play some of those, run through them, give our ideas, thoughts, theories on them, because I kind of want to do those here and there. Not necessarily as like an always regular thing, but as I collect enough, I think it'd be a fun thing to do with Oren and I. Maybe we can make it another little sideshow or something. But if you guys send the ones in where they're text, of course, we'll read them in the beginning of the show, and I'm thinking that even with those ones, we have a couple piled up, then we can start doing an all-in-one, basically what I was kind of saying, except we read them off and talk about them. So the only way that'll happen is with if you guys submit those encounters. So it doesn't matter how big, doesn't matter how small, what it's about, we want to hear about them so we can start compiling these community episodes. And if you guys just want somebody to talk to about an encounter, we're both here, of course, to talk about it. If you don't want it on the podcast, any of the shows, any of the pages whatsoever, that's totally okay, too. We're always here to talk about it, give you guys a listening ear out there for some of you guys who've had traumatic experiences and you don't know who to talk to it about without, you know, people looking at you weird. So we won't look at you weird at all if you guys want to talk to us about it. And of course, if we're close enough, we might even be able to possibly get out there and investigate it. So, of course, make sure you guys report those encounters. Can't say it enough. And if you guys want to support the show, the best way of doing so is through Patreon. Over there, I recently updated the tiers a couple weeks ago, made a little bit more benefits for lower tiers, made some better benefits for the higher tiers. And now there is also a 7-day free trial for the $3 tier and the $5 tier. So if you guys want to check that out, see what it's all about, you guys can always do that. And you also do get exclusive merch store discounts depending on which tier you pick, which also leads into, of course, don't forget to go and support the show through the Open Minds Media merch store. Got stuff for Bizarre Encounters, got stuff for Bizarre Inquiries, Inquiries Are Reality, and a bunch of other designs that I was working on that don't have podcast logos or anything like that on them. And if you guys want to pick one up before the end of April, you guys can use code CRYPTID10 for 10% off. So make sure you guys take advantage of that and use that before that one is gone and you have to wait another couple months for the next promo code to pop up, of course. And if anybody is interested in podcast production services, you guys can hit me up through one of the Open Minds Media pages. Whether you just started a show, you're thinking about starting a show, or you already have a show, I'm here to hopefully help you guys out, make it a little bit easier. And another thing that I was kind of thinking about possibly doing, if there's any authors out there that might be interested in somebody producing an audiobook for them, that's also something I could definitely do. So if you're an author and you want an audiobook made, whether it's done in your voice, my voice, other people that I possibly find, background and sound effects added to it, whatever, it's also definitely something I can do. So make sure you guys hit me up about that also.
And a big shout out and a thank you to our sponsors, Rick and Hans, our buddies at I Know Squatch. Check them out for all your squatchy gear needs. Joe at Cryptotheology, always killing it with your wearable quipted favorites.
Wearable quipteds.
And our buddy Dave, aka the Snarly Yow, big shout out to him. You know, all these awesome events he hosts in the West Virginia area. Cryptid Halloween we got coming up in October, like Shane said. So if you guys can make it out to any of his events, awesome dude, and definitely check it out.
And usually those events are free admission because he wants to give back to the vendors. So just another thing that is definitely awesome when it comes to an event is not having to pay for tickets. And you guys can just hang out and buy stuff from the vendors and everything. And if you guys want to pick up stuff from Dave, he has this absolutely fantastic line of beard and body products. They have a smoky cedar smell with a hint of mint. Absolutely fantastic. I use the beard balm and the beard oil every single day. Body wash intermittently between days and stuff. But it's honestly one of my favorite scents out there. So highly recommend going and checking out his line of natural beard and body products. And getting into the affiliate links, if you guys are interested in going and checking out a piece from Orgonite, you guys can use promo code OMM10 for 10% off at checkout. He creates these awesome pieces that are basically intended to take in negative energy and put out positive energy, and he does different ones depending on what you need. So there's some ones for productivity, there's ones for just like a happy area, but definitely worth going and checking out. He does fantastic, does it all himself, handmade pieces for every single one, so definitely well worth it, of course. And to all my paranormal investigators out there, if you guys haven't already checked out the Chattergeist, highly recommend that you do. It is one of the best paranormal investigating devices out there on the market. It's an all-in-one device, so it's absolutely fantastic. Barry over there at Dimension Devices was recently on the show talking about it. If anybody wants to check out that episode, get a little bit more background info, a bunch of new modifications and patches and a bunch of other really cool stuff coming for that soon. But if you have any technical questions, Barry is the one that runs the Dimension Devices page on Instagram, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions. And if you guys decide to pick one up, make sure you guys use our affiliate link. It goes back to our helping the show, and of course we greatly appreciate it.
And all of this shit we've mentioned is in the link tree in the show description.
Sorry guys, 12 minutes in, about to be 13 minutes in, but we're finally about to hop into the show. And I know it's going to be a great show, like Oren was second guessing himself in the beginning, but anytime Oren does some research, lays it all out, it's always fantastic. So of course I got to pass the microphone over to my homeboy over here, Oren, so that he can get into this awesome deep dive that he worked on this week.
Okay, so, you know, it's been a while since we did kind of like a local well, local to me, North Carolina folklore type situation. So we're going to do one today.
Actually, might have one next week because the Boo Hag is around that area too. Yeah, so we'll actually have two in a row.
I might have some more coming up on the docket too. So we might be Carolinas heavy here for a while. But
yeah, but then I'll take you to Canada soon, and then I'll take you to Norway. So at least we'll mix it up a little bit in the mix here.
That's like North Carolina, but different. So. But anyway, so on tonight's show, we're going to talk about something called Judicata Rock.
And Judicata. It's fun to say. Sorry. Yeah,
there you go. It's like Abkhazia.
Abkhazia. Judicata Abkhazia. Sounds like we're
anyway, doing chants so over here. I got to give a quick shout out to a gentleman. His name is Dan Sellers, and he's with the Carolina Haints podcast. And on his podcast, they talk about a lot of like folklore and legends from the Carolinas. And he's compiled, a lot of these stories into a book. And, you know, I've got his book, and me and Jenny got to actually see him speak last October. He was speaking at one of the public libraries here in Raleigh, so we went and checked him out. Super cool dude. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, definitely check out his podcast. He talks about a lot of stuff that we've covered on the show, actually. But anyway, this is a subject I was not super duper familiar with until I read it in his book. So big shout out to Dan for giving me a lot of the information that we're going to talk about today.
And I'm glad that you dug it up from him, because I've heard this name before, but I haven't dug into it at all. So this will be my first time hearing about this actually in depth, other than just hearing the name. So again, thank you. Big shout out to that guy for doing the research.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I've had this one kind of on the back burner for a while, and a lot of stuff we've talked about kind of in the interim plays into this. So I'm glad we did it now and not when I originally started working on the notes. So.
Hey, man, the show's a journey, because it seems like most of the time when we do this research, even when we have guests on, man, that I'll book like a couple months in advance, everything just kind of plays and falls into each other. And even with the other show, man, I've kind of realized that when you're doing this kind of research, it's not just like a one episode research thing. It's like research as a whole that you're doing as an audio form for people to listen to. So it's just like it's a continuation, and everything kind of falls into place as it's supposed to, you know?
Yeah, it's a synchronicity.
Yep, so. Exactly. It's a magical fiasco.
Well, sometimes it is, for sure. But anyway, so let's get into Judicata Rock. So Judicata Rock is a large soapstone boulder, and it's located in Jackson County, North Carolina, kind of in the western part of the state. And the rock is known for having over 1,500 like ancient carvings and petroglyphs that cover the entire surface of the rock.
What are they of? What are they of?
We're going to get there. So, but anyway, so actually this rock contains more petroglyphs than any boulder east of the Mississippi River. And most of the carvings on it are what are known as cup marks. So this is kind of like if somebody took like an ice cream scooper and like scooped it out of the rock. That's kind of what it looks like. But there's a lot of other carvings, and they're kind of like patterns and pictograms and whatnot. There's like long straight lines. There's concentric circles. There's like crosses and stick figures. But this is kind of interesting. There's what appears to be large seven-fingered handprints carved into the rock. And remember this seven-fingered handprint, it's going to come up again.
The sky people.
Well, we'll see.
I guess we'll see.
Allegedly, there were once two other similar like kind of boulders in this area. But allegedly, one was destroyed during a mining operation.
They just blew that bitch up. They're like, we can't have these markings near our mine. It's going to cause bad things to happen. Just blow the rock up.
And the other one, they say, kind of just eroded away and, you know, disappeared because of environmental factors. But anyway, the existing rock has been dated to between the Middle Woodland and Late Mississippian cultural periods. So the rock is roughly 240 square feet. And it kind of sits in like what is now like this man-made depression kind of in the ground. And in 2013, the rock was added to the U.S. National Register of Historic Places, and they built like this kind of viewing platform thing around it so people could go and see it without, you know, touching it and eroding the carvings and whatnot even more.
It took till 2013 to do that? Holy crap, yeah. Dude. Especially if they knew about this thing. Said. That's insane, dude.
So anyway, this rock is considered like super important to the Cherokee people, and there are multiple legends that they have to explain its origins. So unless you've got anything else, I will jump into some of these legends and tales.
Hey man, you already got me going with the Cherokee stuff. Let's go.
All right. So in Cherokee legend, Judicullah is considered a devil figure, but he's also known as the spirit of game and the hunt. So like, you know, hunting. And so therefore, he was often invoked in like hunting rituals, which is kind of like a Pan type situation, if you ask me, you know, kind of the same thing, like forest, wilderness, hunting god type thing.
I say, especially using like devil figure as like terminology for it. I kind of imagine like the devil depiction is more of the Pan depiction and then continuous down the line, you know?
Well, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before. I read in the Where the Footprints in books, which I talk about all the time on the show, that in a lot of like indigenous locations and cultures, things that are named after the devil have like connections with Bigfoot. And there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings in these areas. And, you know, we talked about Devil's Tramping Ground. I'm sure I mentioned it in that episode, but kind of a fun connection to keep in mind as we get further into this story too.
I guess it depends on when they are named, because you have all the stuff too where I know I've said it a million times in the show, but all the white settlers came through, and anything that was a landmark or something special to the natives, they would just rename it devil something, especially religious mm-hmm. sites. So I'm kind of curious if the devil terminology came before Judicullah or vice versa, you know what I mean? Or if it's just they're saying Judicullah is devil-like because of them taking these characters from native folklore and creating this devil-like aspect to them.
The best I could come across, like he's kind of considered like a devilish figure in the Cherokee folklore, but this is just from a few sources, so I don't claim to be an expert. So if any of the listeners out there have more information than we do, definitely hit us up and correct us.
You said games and then you said hunting rituals. It almost kind of, I don't know, kind of gives me the impression of like a trickster being too. So, which of course also gets associated with devil-like beings.
Kind of forest spirit type thing.
I think we have another situation here of just the messing of taking multiple things and putting them all into one category too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. But so this is really interesting. Judicullah was said to be a hideous giant with sloping eyes and seven fingers and seven toes on each hand and foot. So
super Nephilim. About,
well, we're going to get there.
But, not six fingers and toes, but seven. He's a super Nephilim.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the big daddy Nephilim. But anyway, so I'm going to get into kind of some of the Cherokee legends that talk about how this rock came to be. So according to one legend, there is a Cherokee warrior who was killed in battle, and he left behind a wife and a son and a daughter. And one day the daughter was walking near the Balsam Mountains, and she ended up in this small clearing in the woods. And so she laid down and fell asleep, and by falling asleep in the clearing, she entered the spirit world. And what does that sound like?
The Fae.
Yeah, fairy shit type shit.
All the Cherokee stuff, dude, ends up linking into like Fae. It's kind of weird that it's just like it all was happening around the same time as all the Fae stuff that was happening in Europe. It was just different terminology for stuff, which again kind of goes into the whole like language, continuation of the phenomenon too, that it shows itself at certain time periods as certain things maybe, you know?
Yeah. So when this girl was in the spirit world, a male spirit appeared to her and he proposed that they get married. But the girl said that she would only agree to marry someone who was a great and mighty hunter. So the spirit said that he was Judicullah, which was the spirit of the god of the hunt. So when she figured this out, she agreed to marry him.
She's like, bitch, you know who you're talking to? I'm Judicullah. I run the hunt.
Exactly. So from the spirit world, the girl could see that like her mother and brother were worried about her disappearance. So she asked her new kind of spirit husband to intervene. So he sent a deer to the family, and the deer told them, like physically spoke to them and told them that if they wished to see the girl, they would have to follow it into the woods. So they followed the deer, and the deer led them to a stream near the mountain. And in this stream, there's this large boulder that kind of set in the middle of the stream and split it into two smaller streams. So the deer told them to stay there and fast for 7 days. And the mother and brother did what the deer told them. And on the sixth day, a cave appeared in the wall of the mountain. So we got a lot going on here. We got, you know, giants. We got fairy type stuff now. We got caves added in.
See,
so.
Can fasting also too, like you're starting to release different toxins and things from your body and possibly kind of get you into that like in between state, you know, where it's like one foot in the grave almost because you're like half starving yourself. So then you gain access to these other realms of existence and then you see something that was there the whole time, but you just weren't on the right level to see it at the time. You had to be like almost like one foot in the grave to be able to see this thing.
Possibly. And we're going to talk more about this in a little bit. So that might pop up again. But anyway, so they looked into the cave and they saw like these spirits dancing around a campfire. And the girl was in there with the spirits dancing around the fire. So on the morning of the seventh day, they were allowed to enter the cave. And so the brother kind of, you know, took this as a sign that their fasting was over. So he ate a piece of dried meat that he had with him. But I guess they hadn't kind of completed the ritual fasting process. So suddenly they were like expelled from the cave and the cave like disappeared from the mountain wall in front of them. So maybe that kind of plays into what you were just talking about.
Yep.
So the brother's disobedience like really angered Judicola and he kind of appeared before them on the boulder. And he screamed at the mother and brother, and he had lightning bolts flying out of his hands, kind of like some Emperor Palpatine action. And so they were obviously terrified, and they ran back to the village. So the brother gathered up a group of warriors to go back and confront Judicola. And so when they arrived back at the boulder, Judicola appeared on the boulder again, and he shot lightning bolts, but this time he shot them through the brother's chest and killed him.
Execute Order 66.
Exactly. So the warriors kind of retreated back to the village and they told the mother what had happened. So the girl could see all this kind of from the spirit world. And so she was, you know, grieving about her brother dying. And she told Judicola that she wanted to leave the spirit world and be with her mother so she could comfort her. So Judicola did not want the girl to leave the spirit world, and she said that if she would, or he said rather, if she would stay, he would become the guardian spirit of the Cherokee people. And so when he said this, the girl agreed to stay. And the mother went back with some warriors and the village shaman, and they retrieved her son's body. And when they arrived back at the clearing, they found the son's body laying on top of the boulder. But at this point, it had all these carvings and symbols and whatnot carved into the boulder. And the deer appeared to them again. And he said that the carvings were to act as a guide to the spirit world. And he said that if anyone came back to the rock and was pure of heart and fasted for 7 days, they would be able to enter the spirit world. So that kind of goes back to what you were talking about a little bit ago.
Yep.
So, you know, this is a pretty cool story, I think, but it is important to note that the rock now is not located in the middle of a stream. It might have been at some point, but it's not now. But there is like a little creek that is located nearby. So, you know, kind of take that story with a grain of salt for what it is.
Or, I mean, attempt to fast for 7 days and see if a cave opens. I mean, why not?
But
you won't know unless you try.
There is another story. Do you have anything to add before we jump into that one?
Yeah, just basically somebody should try that because I want to see if it works, man. I mean, I wonder if anybody has tried it though, because I mean, at least like when these stories were getting passed around and maybe when there was settlers and stuff, I mean, I'm kind of curious if there's any stories of anybody actually attempting this or if people just kind of made continuation stories based off of this.
You would think somebody would have tried it at some point, but I did not come across that. So maybe we'll have to go out there and
that's because they're in the spirit world, man.
See the spirit world. Yeah. They got whisked away.
See, because what happens is if you don't eat a piece of food and you get stuck in that tunnel, it's almost like the Fae, man. They lure you in. And then once you're in there, then you can't go back. So it was probably the smart thing that the son ate that piece of food because he probably saved them from being stuck in the spirit world.
No, but then he got Emperor Palpatine'd and died. So
that's true. I mean, a life for a life, I guess. And then he's in the spirit world forever, but at least his family's out, I guess.
All right, so there is another story that I ran across that kind of explains this rock, and this one I think is more interesting, so I saved it for last. So in this other version, there was a Cherokee girl who lived alone with her mother. Her father had died in battle, and her brother lived in another village. So slightly different setup from the first one. So one night, Judicola appeared to the girl and tried to seduce her. And the girl agreed to let Judicola spend the night with her, but she said that he had to leave before the sun rose so the mother didn't see him in the morning.
I'm sleeping with an entity and my mother cannot know about this.
Yeah, she'd be so pissed. So. Anyway, Judicola agreed to this, and so he left the next morning before the sun rose. And when he left some deer meat behind for the girl and her mother. So this pleased the girl's mother. And the next night, Judicola returned again. And so they spent the night together, and he again left in the morning, but this time he left them two whole deer. But this time, the mother complained.
Isn't this prostitution?
I mean, I don't know if she required the deer. So, I mean, maybe it was just, you know, he was just doing her solid, but...
Or she's, I mean, depending on which context you're looking at it, man, it almost kind of sounds very Nephilim-y, you know? Trying to seduce.
That's why I think this one's so fun. But anyway, so he left these two deer for the girl and her mother. But this time the mother complained that he hadn't left firewood for them to cook the deer.
Fuck these deer. I can't cook them if I ain't got firewood. The hell is this guy's problem?
So on the third morning, he left a deer and three, you know, big trees that they could use for firewood. But this time, the mother complained that he hadn't left them anything to cut the firewood. So, you know, Judicola continued to visit and spend time with the girl and leave gifts. But finally, the mother became curious about, you know, her daughter's kind of her visitor, we'll just say.
Late night visitor doing the horizontal hustle. Sleeping
up these deers and trees and whatnot. So anyway, she asked to meet him. And Judicola did not want to meet the mother. He said that she would be afraid of him because his appearance was so, you know, ghastly and scary. But finally, he relented. And the next morning, Judicola did not leave like he normally did. And when the mother saw what a hideous giant he was, just like he said, she ran away screaming. So this made Judicola mad, and he returned to his nearby cave home in a mountain. So he took his ball and went home at that point.
And also, leading into the whole giant lore aspect of things, possible Nephilim connection of things, are they not always associated with living inside mountains or sides of caves or boulders? And then again, because, with the other one having the seven fingers, that's close to the six finger concept.
Yep. And, you know, mountains in a lot of these cultures and lore are places where you go to commune with the gods. So I thought that was kind of interesting too.
Dude, it's so weird once you have all the pieces, because you don't know which trail to follow. Because it's like, if you get into the whole Nephilim concept of things, it almost seems like most other religions that have many gods in them may possibly be just the fallen angels masquerading as gods themselves, which is referred to in the book itself. So it's just like, it's this weird concept. If you follow stuff from like a biblical angle, like it seems like most biblical stories, even native folklore, is all talking about the same stuff, but from different perspectives.
What you choose to call them, like we talk about all the time. And
that's almost a scary concept to think about all of these other gods, you know, even like Thor, like all the Nordic gods, all the Native American spiritual beings possibly being like fallen angels is just like a weird thing to think about. Even if you go past fallen angels and call them that.
You know, I think, and it depends on what you want to call it. Same thing with like demons or whatever. It depends on what you want to call them, but I don't think they're fallen angels. I think they're extraterrestrials, ultra-terrestrials, interdimensionals, whatever you want to call them. I think that's what we're all talking about here, you know?
But I mean, even with like fallen angels, if you're looking at it from that perspective, I mean, I've dug into like the whole ancient aliens, like religion connection concept about like, you know, essentially like the angels being like light beings and then like the demons being like the reptilians, for example. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even if you're looking at it from that perspective, you're looking at light beings, it perfectly describes how people claim that they see angels, you know, as like light beings. And then if they're the fallen angels, they're getting cast down from the sky. I mean, still kind of fits the whole like coming from space, coming from somewhere else
and I think
concept.
If you kind of strip away a little bit of the religious connotations and, like I always say, look at it through a little bit different lens and ask, hey, what could these things actually mean and what could they actually be talking about in real world terms? I think it makes a lot of sense.
And I mean, even just the whole concept of them breeding for the first time and creating these like crazy looking creatures and monsters. I mean, if you have a new genetic that might potentially work with like almost anything you put it with, that's when you get into the whole idea about these like these beings that had like dog heads, these beings that had this, and then it kind of connects into the Egyptian like religion and everything. I mean, that could have came from these extraterrestrials that they were able to put their DNA in with everything, because maybe they weren't necessarily like physically breeding with things, but they were actually just putting their genetics into things. And then maybe when it came to like humans, for example, maybe they actually did breed with humans because the parts were possibly somewhat compatible with
close
each other.
Yeah.
Where it would actually
like we're talking about with Abgasia the other day.
Yep.
You know?
So, yes, yeah, some stuff it can be somewhat genetically close enough that it just functions and works. But of course, like the first generation of that, I mean, I'm sure when people created like I was getting into the whole thing about like donkeys, horses, mule, that whole thing before. Yeah. I mean, the first couple generations are probably going to look funky and mixed up because the genetics haven't like stabilized with each other. But once they kind of go down the line a little bit, if they are able to breed past that, because I don't know if there is species that can breed past that, maybe that is something that is more compatible with like humans, for example, than it would be with like other animals, because their genetic makeup isn't as advanced as like human genetic makeup is. But assumably like the first generations are going to be kind of wonky, fucked up and kind of weird looking. So it completely makes sense why they said like the Nephilim were, you know, these crazy looking creatures. They were like deformed beasts and all this kind of stuff, is because it was mixed up genetics that hadn't stabilized yet, you know, from extraterrestrials breeding with humans.
So, let's get through the story, and when we get to the conclusions, I think we're going to have some more kind of stuff in the same vein to talk about, because we're getting to the good part now. So after a while, this girl began to fear that she was pregnant, but eventually her time of the month came, but there was way too much blood, way more blood than normal.
Well, yeah, she's birthing a giant. Like, fuck.
There's so much blood that her mother had to gather it up in a bucket and she dumped it into the river. So eventually the bleeding stopped. And one night after that, Judicola returned and asked the girl where the child was. And she told him that there wasn't a child, that, you know, false alarm, she had stopped bleeding. And he asked if there had been blood. And she said yes. And he asked where it was. And she said that her mother had, you know, dumped it into the river. And this really pissed him off. So he demanded that the girl take him to the spot in the river, where the blood had been dumped. And when they got there, Judicola pulled a small worm out of the river. And the worm quickly grew into a little baby girl. So this is kind of interesting, I think, because we talk about like with these kind of, hybrid UFO type thing, like, you know, they grow very quickly. And then this gets back to ideas as far as like, you know, these like pregnancies that are taken from people after 3 months or whatever. I mean, it's right in the same vein of that, if you ask me.
I mean, even just on top of not being able to physically birth this stuff, because even if you're looking at it from the giant perspective, not the extraterrestrial perspective, I mean, after 3 months, that baby's probably going to be about the size of what a standard human baby would be at the time of birth. And if the womb hasn't been had that 9 months to be able to expand to that point, it's just causing internal damage. So it's like a human wouldn't physically be able to have the offspring of a giant, of any of this stuff naturally, because it would just destroy the female.
So they had to take the babies out of the women because they couldn't bear them, you know?
I mean, giants, because they're too big. Extraterrestrials, my theory on it is because the heads would be too big once they develop, and it would just completely annihilate the female on the way out.
Like, more like Nordic type thing, you know, they're supposed to be larger than a standard human too, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, women can definitely be stretchy when it comes to having babies, because I mean, some people have like 4 babies, you know, but if you don't have that time for it to naturally be able to stretch to that point, then it's just going to destroy it. Because I know some people are probably thinking, like, if you can hold 4 babies and birth 4 babies, I don't know why you can hold a giant baby. But again, it's that matter of expansion in a short period of time that causes internal damage on top of that.
Yeah, you get like a alien face hugger type situation. So anyway, after the baby was born, we'll just say, Judicola begged the girl to return home to his cave. And since they had this, you know, charming little baby girl now, she agreed to it. But her mother was, you know, just distraught that the girl had abandoned her. So soon, the girl's brother came to visit. And when he found the mother, you know, distraught about all this, he decided that he was going to track down the giant and retrieve his sister and bring her back home. So the brother eventually tracked Judicull and his sister down. But along the way, while he was tracking them, he found evidence that another child had been born. And so kind of in the stories I was reading, he came across footprints, and there's like a large set of footprints, and then like a human size set of footprints, and then a smaller child size set, and a even smaller like baby size set. And as he followed them, the two children prints got larger because, you know, ostensibly these things grow very quickly. So he found these prints and kind of tracked them down. And also along the way, he discovered a large boulder, and it had these intricate carvings etched into it. And this is the boulder that, of course, became known as Judicull Rock. And according to this version of the story, the carvings were formed by the worm that grew into the second baby crawling around on the rock and etching these carvings. So when the brother finally found his sister and Judicull and the two kids, they were in their cave, and the brother appeared inside, and he saw several spirits or people dancing around the campfire. And again, his sister was one of them. So this is very reminiscent of the first story. And so when the girl saw her brother, she gathered up the two kids and went outside to talk to her brother. And she told him that, you know, she wasn't coming home, that her place was now with Judicull and her children. So the brother returned, you know, several times throughout the years to visit them. And eventually he insisted on meeting Judicull. And Judicull said that the brother couldn't see him because, you know, he was so scary. Same thing as the first one. But finally he relented, and he said that the brother would have to fast for 7 days and then he would show himself. But kind of like the same story, the brother was not obedient. He disobeyed Judicola's kind of parameters that he put on it, and so the brother never got to see him in this version of the story. So that one, I think, is really interesting and has a whole lot of like Nephilim-type aspects to it. What do you think, man?
Man, I was going to say, what if they aren't two different variations of the same story, but rather two different stories altogether? Because assumably, things like this, whether you're looking at it from it being some type of being, you're looking at it from the Nephilim concept, extraterrestrial concept, whatever way you're looking at it, assumably they're going to try to breed with multiple humans. They're not just going to pick one and make it their wife forever. So considering that there's a lot of variations in the story besides just the stuff they're doing in the cave at the end and everything, like, again, what if they're just two different stories of the same entity doing the same thing over and over again, but with different brides producing more and more offspring? And maybe some of the ones that
different extraterrestrial entities. It could have been more than one thing that was doing this, you know?
I mean, I was even going to say maybe the stuff in the first story, the people that they saw dancing around the fire may have actually been some of the previous wives that this thing's picked. Because after it takes them into the cave, it seems like they become part of some like spiritual realm. So maybe the women that they saw dancing around the fire in the first story, it's just like his collection of different wives that he has offspring with. So there might be seven different variations of the story, one for each one of the women that were dancing around the fire, you know?
You've just gone like full on Inception here. So what if like the girl from the first story was one of the ones in the second story dancing around the fire? So
see, that's the hard part with oral tradition.
You know, adaptation of this.
Dude, that's the hard part with oral traditions, though, man, is that there, like I said, there could have been multiple versions of the story from the different women that he's had offspring with, but it's like now we're just kind of scraping and trying to collect these native stories because they hadn't been written down until, you know, relatively recently. So, I mean, like, imagine how many of these stories have been lost. And like I said, there could already be six other variations that if you asked somebody who was around during this time, they were like, oh, yeah, there's this girl that did this, this girl that did this, this girl that did this. And we're just kind of looking at what's remnants are left at this point.
Yeah, so we've kind of touched on a lot of conclusions and theories already, but I'm just going to run through some things real quick before we kind of theorize a little bit more. So some people in more modern times have theorized that the petroglyphs on the rock are like a stylized map of the land that the Cherokee used for hunting. And then some people also say that it's like kind of a story that tells of a 1775 battle between the Cherokee and the Creek tribes.
I was going to say, maybe this kind of leads somewhat into like Lovelock Cave too, that there was giants that were breeding with their females. So they all decided to chase them into a cave one day and burn them all alive, you know?
Yeah, maybe so. But, you know, a lot of these, the dating that has been done on this rock seems like it should be like kind of older than, you know, it being a stylized map or, you know, a recreation of a battle. So that, I think, is almost like people grasping at straws to try to explain this thing away. Because I say the rock predates the Cherokees' arrival to the area. And then, you know, again, we talked about the whole Nephilim connections and, you know, angels, demons, aliens appearing to human women, seducing them, interbreeding with them, all that sort of thing.
Maybe this was even a phenomenon that they were investigating for a while, and they knew that something weird was going on with it, which is why they didn't actually, like, make it a landmark until 2013.
Yeah,
and then they purposely took it out of the water to put it somewhere else to maybe break whatever connection was there.
Well, and it's also been speculated that the carvings could be some sort of, like, star map, which would kind of make sense what you were saying if they were researching and trying to figure out what this thing was before they, you know, kind of released it to the public.
And yeah, maybe it has to be looked at in a certain way, or maybe when it was in that certain spot, the sun would hit it a certain way and like reveal something different about it. So they had to move the location so like that people
Indiana
would be able
Jones
to see
type
it.
Situation.
I mean, with a lot of these ancient megalith type things, it seems like that's a commonality in a lot of them, is that the sun placement plays a role with what's on it. I mean, look at the pyramids in Mexico with the snake on the side. Look at all the stuff there is in like over in like Europe and over on the other side of the world, that it like the light will come down and reveal and point to like a certain area in the building at a certain time of day, certain type of year. Like all of this stuff seems to be linked to something that has to do with like sun placement. So when it comes to the native stuff, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all either, because even some of the mounds, they take on like a different feel to them when the sun hits them from a certain direction. And I was even hearing something with like with Serpent Mound, that they purposely built up trees in the front area of it, because when the sun hits it a certain way, it like it changes like the shape into like something else. I don't know. It might just be a conspiracy theory. I'll have to dive back into it. Maybe we can do a Serpent Mound episode at some point. But I've always heard that there's something weird with even sun placement when it comes to the Serpent Mound.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking off of that and the whole like star map idea, there's been several UFOs spotted like in this area, in this clearing where the rock is now. So maybe it is some sort of navigational beacon or something to that effect, you know?
The cave itself is a portal, man. I mean, that's maybe. Also definitely a theory.
You just got to find it.
Because there's some like hidden Native American, like they don't use the word portal or like Stargate, but something like this where you're sitting in this place, and then after a certain amount of time, this door reveals itself on the side of a cave. I mean, realistically, isn't that a portal to some variation or a wormhole of some sort, possibly?
Where you enter the spirit realm, in their words, you know?
But yeah, they're referring to it as a spirit realm, but it could literally be like a whole other physical realm. Or again, maybe it's the astral realm, like they're referring to it as a spiritual realm.
Either
but
way,
I mean, if it's another physical realm, it's possible.
Yeah, they're going somewhere else in some sense of the word.
I mean, Judicula seems very physical. So, I mean, that could be his doorway in and out between our world and whatever world he comes from. And it's just a matter of you go deeper into the cave and it reveals itself into something else. And so, I mean,
doesn't that kind of make sense too? Like how people describe portals, like, you know, this thing opens up and you can see like almost like a window through to the other side. And they were talking about how they could see into the cave and these people dancing and whatnot. You know, maybe it is some sort of portal.
I mean, maybe that fits in with the missing 411 aspect too, man, because these people go missing in the woods. Assumably most of them don't have anything to eat. Maybe being half starved to a certain extent reveals certain things within the woods, certain doorways, certain gates. And then maybe these 411 people, some of them may not even be missing in a lot of the aspects that we've talked about, but maybe they just wander into a cave thinking that it's going to be a place for them to stay warm. And then the door closes behind them, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So just kind of running through some other thoughts I had, you know, we kind of talked about the whole Nephilim aspect and how, like you said, Nephilims are normally talked about as being like these ugly, terrifying, you know, gnarly ass giants. But at the same time, in these stories, they were able to reproduce with humans. But like we talked about, you know, it wasn't really in like the quote unquote normal way you would reproduce. So that kind of brings up ideas of like breeding and hybridization and things like that to me. So I think, you know, again, this is another issue of language. We talk about this all the time, but I think it's very possible this is another one of those situations where people are describing what actually happened just with the best language they have. Like, how do you describe portals and some gnarly ass entity coming down and mating with your human women? You know, this seems like as good a way as any to describe that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and even kind of connecting into, not to get too weird about it, but just like thinking about like the physical aspect of like how it would work with a giant mating with a female. Like, assumably, there's going to be bodily damage if they mate the normal way. So if you're looking at it from like an extraterrestrial perspective, maybe there was some type of insemination process where they weren't necessarily reproducing in the manner that we're thinking that they were, just because, again, that the physicality of that, I don't think would work out.
Yeah. The logistics,
well, the logistics of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there are these theories that these Nephilim creatures were also living in North America. And we've even talked about, in our kind of Wendigo episode, I think, about how some of these Wendigo legends could be based off of Nephilim type creatures. And I think this story plays right into all of that, you know?
And I mean, how long, we had Travis Roy on a long time ago, Ancients of Giant, or Giants of Ancient America, and how many stories has he dug up all around the United States, talking about even like the Native American burial mounds having these things in them. So, I mean, like they were definitely connected with like the Native culture, and whether you're looking at it from a Nephilim perspective or a giant perspective, whatever, there was definitely something going on between the Native Americans and giant beings.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how would you explain the burial mounds, you know, that they'd be lied in together?
And something I just recently heard, I can't remember where I read it or heard it, but some Nephilim were said to have glowing blue eyes, which kind of plays into the whole moon-eyed people thing, which occurred in the same kind of Appalachia area of Western North Carolina, East Tennessee, all that. So that's something I thought you would think is kind of interesting too.
And that's just reminded me too. I've had that sitting on the back burner for a long time that I actually need to finish, as I do have like half of a Moon Eyed People episode. So that's definitely something we can come along to, especially if you guys enjoy this, us digging into some Native American folklore. I know we had a comment a long time ago about, pretty much like having somebody on that's native to be able to tell some of these stories. And, just to that listener, if you're still a listener out there, I've actively been trying to do that. It seems like it's a harder task than I thought it was going to be. Because one, I either talk to somebody and they basically say that they don't like putting out their family stories onto the internet and everything. They're like kind of keeping them personal, or the people that are out here doing this, they are running their own channels or doing this. Like they're, don't seem interested. So, I mean, I love digging into these Native American stories, and I'm definitely planning on doing the Moon-Eyed People one, but that's why I've had it on the back burner. But that also being said, if there's any Native voices out there that want to come on and share some of their stories, I have been actively looking for that. So please, guys, like, you know, come tell your stories on the show. Because like I said, I have the lineage, of course, which is where my interest comes in with like Cherokee. My grandma was 100%, which makes me 25%. But with the 25%, I look like a white dude. It's just not enough for me to be running out here being like, I'm Cherokee. Like, that's why I usually lead with my grandma's 100%, because I'm not. I feel like that's too little of an amount to really claim that, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, we're telling all these stories with the best of intentions and the purest of heart. And like you said, the whole Moon-Eyed People thing kind of plays into this a lot. So I think that would be definitely cool to hit after we've covered this. But that's pretty much all I had for this one. I mean, is there any kind of closing thoughts, theories, bizarre inquiries, anything you've got to throw in?
I mean, just the main thing that kind of just like baffles me is just how Nephilim-esque this is. And again, like I was kind of saying earlier in the show, it's like the more I dig into this stuff, I know like it may not necessarily be that like the Bible is the tell-all be-all book for all of this kind of stuff, because it's all, again, just multiple perspectives of the same thing, but maybe that's just like the most complete variation of
even
the story
like
itself.
A historical document, you know, even if you strip away the religious aspects of it, just as a historical document, I think it there's merit there, you know?
Because, I mean, there are parts of it that are definitely proven. I'm not saying that I think it's like a fiction book, but whatsoever. I just legitimately think that all of these holy books are legitimate stories all the way through, just from different perspectives. Just to clarify that for people, I'm not saying that any part of the Bible is necessarily fiction, just that different perspectives of the same thing. Because, I mean, we know the Great Flood happened regardless. Like, that's proven. Like, they've proven the fact that, like, Jesus was a legitimate, like, real person. So it's like, that's no doubt in my mind that all of that stuff is true. It's just a matter of, again, which perspective you want to view everything from.
And I think where we get a little in the weeds with stuff like that is people wanting to be 100% literal to the word with a lot of this stuff. I mean, like I always say, I think when looking at these ancient texts, you've got to ask yourself, what could these things mean in a current real world term with the language we have now?
And I mean, it's been converted like I said, multiple times too.
There's plenty of places to go.
Because that's the other hard part is that originally it would have been written in Hebrew. And Hebrew, I mean, just variations from words. Like anybody that's ever watched like an anime and you watch like the sub versus like the dub and stuff like that, like the words get changed between languages because there's multiple words that mean the same thing in different languages, but they're not necessarily the same word. You know what I mean? Like,
And some like figures of speech and stuff don't translate, you know, so
if you're trying to be literal to the word in English, it's just not going to work because that was not the original language. Unless you read it in the original language, that's the only way you can really be true to the exact word that it's saying.
Yeah, and I think the ideas and the concepts are more important than the literal language, but that's just me. But anyway, that's all I've got for Judah Color Rock.
And we, of course, have to do a little rant at the end about just like condemnation of breaking apart religious aspects and texts and whatever. So sorry, guys, for that little spat at the end there, but that's some stuff I needed to clarify.
Clarify away. All right. So anyway, I think this was a fun one to do. It got funner the more people we've talked to and the more research we've done since I started on it. So I'm glad we waited, like I said. But so definitely hit us up and let us know if you want us to hit more Native American kind of folklore and legends like this.
Or, I mean, any folklore, legends, tall tales, any of that stuff from around the world. If you guys got anything you guys want us to cover, let us know. A lot of this stuff when it comes to like folklore and especially like the local legends and everything, it's like it's very localized. So it's like I can dig around the internet. I find some random stuff here and there. Don't get me wrong, but there might be some stuff that I've never heard of that I wouldn't find on the internet unless I'm physically looking for it. So definitely make sure you guys throw us those local stories because like the episode that I got coming for next week is another like super localized one that I'd never heard of before, and I only heard of it because somebody threw the suggestion at Gabby threw the suggestion at me because it was like a quick reference in a show she was watching. So it's like, again, make sure you guys throw us all those little ones because I like diving into the obscure stuff that not a lot of other podcasts talk about. And if you guys want us to kind of keep that our niche where we dive into these like smaller stories that a lot of other shows don't necessarily cover because they're kind of obscure and off the wall, you guys got to keep feeding them to us because we're hungry for them. And with that, if you guys enjoyed this episode, make sure you guys leave a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify. We would greatly appreciate it. Helps boost up the show in the algorithms, makes it so more people are able to see the show, which means the community can keep growing, which means we can take in more stories, we can take in more suggestions for things and keep rapidly growing the community as much as we possibly can, because that's what we're trying to do over here. And if you guys read or leave a 5-star review, I will read on the show, give you guys a big shout out. And if you guys don't want to do that at all and you guys just enjoy the show, we greatly appreciate it all the same. If you want, you can put the show on auto download, or you can even share the show with people through word of mouth. Awesome money to help the show grow if you guys aren't the type that likes leaving reviews or ratings. And then, you know, if you keep spreading the show around, maybe you'll get everybody at your work listening to it. Then you guys could talk about all these obscure stuff that we talk about, and you might make yourself a really fun workplace to work at. So make sure you guys just leave those reviews and expand the show, because anything you guys do, we greatly appreciate.
And contact us through email, social media, the submission forms, all that good stuff. If you guys want to share fan art or just, you know, have a conversation with us, you want to be a guest, invite us on to be a guest on your show, anything like that, just get up with us somehow.
And everything that we've mentioned is all available on the Linktree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, I have been the one that they call Shane Squatch.
And I've been Oren.
And guys, I gotta tell you every show, because I love you, and I don't want you guys to ever feel like you can't be your true, weird, bizarre selves. So guys, always, always stay bizarre. Bizarre. Bizarre.
A bloody worm baby?